ready.
Let's go.
You're listening to the podcast for millennials discussing the important stuff without the fluff. Mindset, finance, health, business, relationships. The Treat Yourself podcast covers it all. Hosted by Carla Schesser.
Welcome to the Treat Yourself podcast, episode 11. As you can tell, this is not the original host, Carla Schesser. This is now the new host, Tyler Leslie.
Hello.
So we figured that we would do a bit of a switch up today. And before I get into it, this was an extremely hard episode to lock in, because Carla doesn't like to speak about herself very much. She's very modest, very cute, I might add. But yeah, she just doesn't like talking about herself. And I felt that her story is a really good story and has a lot of examples of, you know, just obstacles in life, getting over them, getting past them, running through them. And so, yeah, I just kind of wanted to dive into her story a little bit. So, I mean, we could kick it off since you're over there being all quiet in the corner.
I was just saying, I'm giving people what they want, and not me telling my story, but Tyler being back on the podcast. The amount of messages and just general conversation that went something like, hey, when's Tyler going to be back on the show? I thought it was your and Tyler's podcast. Yeah, I'm a little bit salty about that, to be honest. But like I said, got to give the people what they want. So,
and I appreciate that. I appreciate those messages. So shout out to the real ones. And for the other ones, now's your chance to support.
So I'm going to try not to take over, because it's a little odd to me being on the other side of the table and not having my notes ready and kind of having a game plan for the episode. So I'm going to sit back, relax, enjoy, and hopefully say something smart to your prepared questions. Right, Tyler?
Yep, got him.
Again, not prepared.
This is my time to shine. So basically, let's get into it. I feel like there's a lot of people out there that don't know a lot of what you've dealt with and what you've gone through in life. So I reckon let's just go from there. Like, give them a snapshot of early days. Everybody knows the Carla today. So I just want to jump into it and maybe get started with what you went through as a young child, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So my mom had me when she was 17. So young parents, mom was really young as well. So not that that's really relevant. I think it just kind of shows that maybe some of the grit or the, how would I say it? Just kind of getting on with it has shown up in my life even way back when. Like, my mom obviously was a young mother, single mom at that stage as well, and she kind of handled it like a boss. So I just wanted to put that out there as well, and probably a lot of the determination that I possess now has genetically, let's say, come from her. Like, I think she's a boss babe. When I was born, I was born a few weeks premature, and sort of really early on, doctors and, well, my mom first, but realized that I was quite weak. So examples of that would be, you know how kind of babies are able to lift their head after a certain amount of time, or like lift their necks, or just like body sort of the limbs of being able to do stuff. Yeah. And I didn't. I was kind of a baby that was tiny. So I actually used to wear doll clothes. I didn't fit into any of the newborn attire. So mom used to buy doll clothes to fit me. And I was always just really tiny, like really little, really tiny. Just kind of laid there for a while. Didn't really seem to get a lot of the movement that maybe most babies do. So my mom took me to the doctors and was kind of like, you know, is this normal? you know, should I be doing something different? Like, you know, I'm a new mom, I'm a young mom, am I doing it right? Anyway, long story short, they kind of said, look, it appears that she has something in layman's term that we call low muscle tone. So basically it means that your muscles don't develop like a normal person. So she'll always be quite physically weak and tiny. It'll be interesting to see if she is actually able to crawl, walk, and pretty much live a normal life. And obviously that comes with a bunch of unknown, like, you know, when you're a few months old, you don't know what is going to happen later on. But anyway, that was kind of my first year or so, was my mom having to deal with the fact that her baby was really small, really weak, and even something as exciting as having your child crawl and walk, that may not happen, if that makes sense. So
were you in the hospital for a while, or
I was in the hospital for a while when I was born, because I was premature, but then I got discharged and sort of got taken home, and mom like cared for me as you would any other baby. But it's only in those later months when a child should be starting to develop like the movement that you would expect, like I described earlier, that I didn't. And my grandma would be like, oh, it's not quite normal, or you know, maybe you should just kind of get that checked out.
Like, so you went to a lot of specialists when you at this stage, when you were discharged, you went through a lot of specialists, or?
Yeah, so when my mom first noticed that was kind of happening, I went to physios mainly, just to kind of get the movement happening. What my mom would do as well is she would put me on my belly, and she would put my milk bottle like, you know, a few meters in front of me, and basically be, you know, if you want that, come on, move, go and get it. Type of thing. And obviously I didn't starve or anything like that, but it was more the you know, waving the carrot, saying if you want that, you're gonna have to start moving your body in order to get there, right? And that's literally my mom. Like, she's spicy, but for me that was good in that situation, because she wasn't gonna, you know, coddle me and be like, oh, okay, well, you know, you can't do it, that's okay, my babe, you know, whatever. It's no, if you want your milk bottle, move your body, let's go, come on, get it. And so that was really her mindset around me growing up. I eventually did walk. I think I was, you know, quite a little bit later than what most babies would end up walking, so there was that. But you know, I did, and that's 100% to the dedication and like the sassiness maybe from my mum of making sure that if that's what I wanted, you know, that's I did the work and essentially got there. So that was when I was a baby. Obviously all through primary school I was always the smallest kid in class. Like, I was still physically weak, like I could still walk around, I could still do that stuff, but I was never running, I was never an athletic kid by any means. Always the smallest, always the shortest, and that that was pretty much my childhood. I always knew that I was different physically, and kids made sure I knew that as well. So kids are awesome in the fact that they're honest, like you know, they say what they see, and they, you know, they would call it out. And when you kind of get into high school, it goes from more honesty to maybe more
like making fun almost.
Pointing it out, not for, oh, that's interesting, but more of like, hey, let's make fun of you and pick on you. So I was in high school, had obviously dealt with that my whole life. Grew up with nicknames like giraffe, so I have an extra vertebrae in my neck, which makes my neck a little bit elongated. So my nickname going through high school was giraffe. I had chicken legs. I had all sorts of horrible names, which you know, at the time was obviously hurtful. And being a vulnerable, self-conscious teenager really started to take a toll.
So before we get into obviously the mental side of that, growing up through all of this, were there any, besides not being able to develop, not developing like a normal child would, did you have any physical, like, I don't know what you want to call them.
Like limitations?
Yeah, or, limitations is a good word.
Yes, so I wouldn't participate in like school carnivals, which I don't know what you call it in America, but like your athletics stuff. So I would always sit out in those and rather go to the library and read, because being outside in the sun and nature, getting sweaty, doing athletics wasn't my cup of tea. And, you know, my teachers were great at that, like kind of realizing that that's not my thing, and so I'd be able to do other activities. But wasn't doing any sport, wasn't running, just not an athletic kid is how I can describe it. And
but you used to dance.
So my mom used to be like a professional ballerina before she had me. And so I would always go to like dance classes with her when she would teach when she was younger, because that's how she made her money. So I would always participate in like the dance classes with her. So I'll do all the like stretching and all of the little dances when I would go with. And then I only really kind of took up dancing again though when I was in high school. So that was kind of the pivotal moment, was maybe year 9, 10 when we sort of moved to Australia, is when kind of that became another focus for me. So what I mean by that is, being from South Africa, there's obviously not a lot medical wise, you know, that I guess that you can do, or that you can sort of investigate. But in Australia, you've got awesome healthcare, and it's free when you're on Medicare, so you can see all these specialists and stuff. So we got really excited, and that's when my journey of seeing all these different specialists kind of started happening. And one of the things that they said is, you need to get her active, like you need to get her moving again, get her muscles in the state where they can start building. And so that's when I took up dancing again.
Wow, it's so interesting too, because I feel like even that was maybe 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago for you. And the answer today is still to get moving, move around, exercise. Like, it's interesting. So so were you, like, when you were dancing and stuff like that, like, you didn't have any issues? Like, you didn't, it wasn't pain or?
No, I've never experienced pain when I was younger with my challenges. So I'm extremely grateful for that. The best way to describe it is a constant feeling of my back and my joints not being able to click. So, you know, like I've heard it, like, you've got your knee and you just, you can't click it. Like, you need that relief to click. That's how my back, but especially my lower back and my neck, feels constantly, and it will vary in terms of like being uncomfortable, but that's how it feels. So it's not a pain, it's more like of a frustrating,
just uncomfortable
uncomfortable feeling.
That makes sense. I don't know if you said this or not, but you obviously said that you had the extra vertebrae in your neck. What about your back?
So when we moved to Australia, I started seeing a bunch of specialists. One of the things that we realized when I was going through all my testing, like, we had a bunch of MRIs, X-rays. I saw a pediatric specialist. I saw an osteo something or other. They've got really long names. You name it, I saw someone in that field. And what we realized is, my back is, it's like fused. So if you've seen me, my back's always straight. In fact, everyone always asks, oh, do you do yoga? You've got the best posture ever. And I'm like, oh, kind of cheating, because I don't really have a choice. But my back's super, super straight, and I can't flex forward. So most people, you know, have an issue with their back because they've got bad posture. They're leaning forward. I'm the complete opposite. If anything, I sort of concurve backwards. So it's got nothing to do with the physical back being fused, in terms of I haven't had any surgery and they've put plates in to force my back in that position. For some reason, it just is, like, it just naturally is, like, for I cannot bend forward at this stage. Like, it just doesn't happen. Yeah. So we realized that. Obviously, I have an extra vertebrae. My rib cage doesn't sort of, you know how you, like, you see a rib cage and it's kind of, well, you've seen a rib cage. Everyone knows what a rib cage looks like.
Yep. See them every day.
Yep. Mine is almost tilted on the 45-degree angle. So when I saw I forgot what his name is. He was a specialist down in Brisbane. He asked my pediatrician at that point, is this girl like 6 foot something? And he goes, no, why is that? And he's like, well, her rib cage is huge. Like, it's really, oh, wow, like, odd shaped. And he goes, no, she's tiny. Like, she's little. And they're like, man, that's so weird. That's wow, so odd. So I went through testing, like, I don't know, years and years and years, seeing this person, that person running this test. I've had numerous surgeries. I've got scars left, right, and center just of taking little snippets of muscle here and muscle there. And, yeah, you know, lumbar puncture for your fluids, like, you name it, I've had it done. And after all of that, it's still inconclusive as to why I am the way that I am.
So there's no definitive.
Mm-mm.
Obviously, I know a little bit more than most would here.
Yeah.
Listening, but they were never even able to give you a slight idea of what might be the reason for any of this.
No, like, the closest that I think we were leaning towards was some type of arthritis for a juvenile. So basically where your joints flare up and cause havoc on your body, and that's maybe why, I don't know, my back has kind of gone the way it's gone. Like, it hasn't been conclusive, but that was sort of, yeah, as further as we had gone before I said, you know what, I'm done. Like, I'm sick of being prodded and cut and running tests and having, you know, the conversation in the doctor's office every so often of, sorry, we don't know why you are the way, yeah, you are. And that kind of got to me after a certain point. Yeah. And I was like, I'm done. Like, whatever it is, what it is, I'm just going to live with it.
What age was this that you decided that?
This was towards the end of school. So maybe like year 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's that, like, maybe 15, 16, yeah, something like
16.
That?
Yeah, like 16.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And another thing, like, it isn't all loom and gloom in terms of seeing doctors and specialists and stuff. I must say,
yeah,
I have been extremely blessed. Like, one of the symptoms, I guess you could say, is I wasn't actually born with very many adult teeth.
Yeah.
So what started to happen is, as all of my baby teeth fell out, there was nothing to replace them. So even when you and I met, I had a bunch of gaps in my mouth, like where I would smile and there would just be, you know, 3 or 4 teeth in a row missing. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously because I didn't have the adult teeth that came through. So what I was blessed enough to get was a full set of implants on my upper jaw. So
yeah,
actually last week I got the tickle for my 18-month post-surgery, that it's all good, it's all, yep, done. So I've got a beautiful smile now, which I'm super, super grateful for.
They look amazing, by the way.
Thank you. So yeah, I would like never smile back in the day either. You know, it's just like those little things. It wasn't a massive, what am I trying to say? So it's not like someone's in a wheelchair and you can clearly see what's going on,
yeah,
with that person. You, right, can see what their challenge is. For me, it was a bunch of little stuff.
Yeah.
It was uncomfortable back. It was low muscle tone. It was feeling fatigued all the time. It was missing teeth. It was sensitive eyes. Like, it was all, yeah, this little stuff that kind of would compound to the way that I felt any given day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And just for anybody listening, I've heard this story many times, and I feel like I learned something new every single time. So this is not just for dramatic effect of the show. I'm actually learning as we go too. Yeah, that's crazy. So something like that is pretty traumatic,
mm-hmm,
or can be. And as you know, trauma can send a person one of two ways. A lot of people seem to fall into it. And some can propel forward.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're the latter, but let's talk about the emotional or the mental side of it growing up. Like in school, obviously the bullying and stuff can be pretty hectic nowadays, and you know, even back then as well. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, so I definitely didn't choose the path of a victor in that situation all the time. Like, I did go through the phase of feeling like a victim. So when I was going through all those tests and doctor visits and specialist visits and whatever else, like, you're at 10, 11, and I said, no more, done, like, I'm sick of kind of going through the same cycle.
Yeah.
I kind of reached a point where it's difficult to talk about, but like I reached the point where I was kind of questioning, like, why would I went to a Catholic school. I'll just set the scene. So I went to a convent when I was tiny back in South Africa. So a convent is basically run by priests and nuns.
Yep.
So your teachers are nuns, essentially, and heavily like Catholic. And, you know, that's what we were taught as a religion. Moving to Australia, obviously Christianity is kind of what is the religion at most schools that you go to. So I've always had that belief system growing up as a kid. And I got to the point where I was like, why would God put someone on earth to go through that? Like, how cruel could this person, God, entity, whatever, be for having a child kind of go through all of that? Like, why would they do that? And I was like, you know what, big F you to whoever that is, I'm just gonna like end it. So, you know, I don't have to deal with it anymore. Like, that seemed to be the most effective way to deal with it, essentially. And so that was obviously toppled with getting rejection after rejection. Well, that's how I saw it, from the doctors, and then going through the bullying, not being able to kind of do what I wanted physically, and it all got a bit too much, honestly. And I remember coming home from school one day, sitting in my room, kind of like contemplating how I was going to end it, like end my life, right? And I remember, I don't know, it's so weird talking about it because it feels so removed, but then also so raw at the same time. And Carla being Carla did a pros and cons list of of all the ways that I could do it and what would happen on each of those. So I knew I didn't want it to be messy, because I didn't want my loved ones to have to find that and deal with it. So I knew that it either had to be me doing it somewhere where someone else would find me, or doing it in a way where there was no cleanup, like, you know. I don't know if this is a bit sensitive for some listeners, so if it is, just skip over like 5-10 minutes and you're good.
It's life.
So anyway, I decided that the route that I was going to do was sleeping pills, or just pills generally, like OD on that, and it would be as if I was sleeping and just didn't wake up, right? That was the thought process that I was going through. So one day I came home from school, sitting in my room, grabbed all the pills that I could find in our medicine cabinet, like up in the kitchen, sat there with this big tub of pills, like emptied them all out into like a little stash in the front, big glass of water. And I was like, yep, okay, this is it. This is it, essentially. And I remember like holding the glass and like holding like a bunch of pills. And I remember the thought being like, dude, how are you even going to do this? Because when you're sick, you can't even swallow one pill without being dramatic about it. Like, you're about to do the most difficult thing of your life, not taking your life, but having to swallow, you know, 30 odd pills. And it's so weird. Like, that is what I was thinking at that stage. But anyway, so I was sitting there about to do it, and I felt this, like, I don't know, like this almost like a flush, like almost as if like your body gets drained from you. So, you know, like when you think like you see a ghost, or you get scared or whatever, and like it feels like your whole inside just drains from you. I had that feeling for like a good, what felt like a few minutes. And then I was like, what the F are you doing? I was like, you're looking at it all wrong. Like, the reason why you're going through all of this can't be for nothing.
Yeah.
Like, there has to be a reason why God, I'm doing quotes, you know, would put a person through that. It can't be for nothing. Like, I don't accept it anymore. Like, there yeah. has to be a reason why. And yeah, that I just put the pills away, put the lids back on. I think I threw most of them out because they're already out of their packaging.
Yeah.
Put the thing away and just went back to doing my homework. Like, got my homework out, sat on my desk and started doing it. And it was the weirdest experience.
Wow.
It was almost like a, not an acceptance, but like a, I can deal with it. Like yeah. a, yep, yeah, it's good. Like, I'm okay, if that makes sense. Yeah, it's hard to describe, but
sure.
Yeah, it almost felt like an acceptance, like a, you know what, it doesn't bother me anymore. I'm obviously going through it for a reason. Ride the wave, essentially.
Yeah.
And something's going to come out the other end.
Mm. That story is tough. I've heard it a couple of times, and it gives me goosebumps every time. Mm-hmm. Hits me right in the feels. Yeah, it's just tough. Like, it's crazy. Anyways.
Yeah.
So after that happened,
mm-hmm.
like what happened next for you? Like, obviously you went normal days after that.
Mm.
What was like what happened?
Yeah. Nothing necessarily changed in terms of no one started, you know, calling me names or, all of a sudden I was able to do the stuff that I wanted to, but it was almost like to put the expression water off a duck's back in a way. And at that time, my dad had just got into, personal development. So, you know, he was on his own journey and it just so happened that, he started reading, self-development books and, for some reason piqued my interest, and I was like, hey dad, like, what are you reading? And those sorts of conversations started to happen.
Yeah.
And then he was like, oh, do you want to go to an event with me, you know, like a two-day event where it's all about personal development and, you know, your mindset, beliefs, forming habits, goals, all of that good stuff. And I was like, sure, why not? And we went on our first, you know, dad-daughter excursion to Melbourne for a few nights. And
who was it?
People have mixed opinions about this person now, mm-hmm. but at that stage, it was someone called Jamie McIntyre from 21st Century.
Mm.
And he basically just got like a whole bunch of experts in a room for 2 days and they would do their little pitch, and you would break like wooden boards and write affirmations and do all this goal setting, and then they would try and sell you stuff at the end of it. But, you know, for the first day and a half, it was great. There was a bunch of value. And so, yeah, that's kind of where it started in terms of my self-development journey. So I think, you know how they say you have to like hit your rock bottom before you kind of go into a stage where you're open to help? Like, in a way, I kind of think maybe that was what happened. Like, I needed to get to a point where I was being the victim and went through that phase and then had something happen. And then I was open to, okay, what's next? Like, how are we moving forward?
How long was this after? I don't know if you said it, but how long was this after the episode of you?
I don't know for sure. Okay. It just kind of felt like all of a sudden I was interested in what, you know, my dad was listening to and what books he was reading. So I'm not sure. Could have been a few months, could have been instantly. I just remember that being like the next notable sort of part. Yeah.
And so from there, you obviously have a big accomplishment. What led up to that?
Yeah, so I think you're talking about writing my book.
I am.
Yeah, okay. So going through all the personal development stuff, I obviously read a bunch of books, and they were incredibly helpful and they're awesome. You know, the classics, Think and Grow Rich, you know, all the stuff by Brian Tracy, you got Robert Kiyosaki, like literally all of the good stuff. Classics. Tony Robbins, yeah, classics.
Yep.
And while they're great and timeless, what I kind of felt was, and maybe, I don't know, it was just me, but at that time in my life, it was a bit hard to grasp a lot of the notions or context that they're kind of explaining this stuff on. Like, so, you know, a goal might be to buy a house or to buy a car. And when my goal was literally just to get through the next week without having an episode, or do you kind of get what I mean?
So it was like, more relatable to like an older generation.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. To adults that in some way maybe have their life figured out and, you know, they're not kind of going through the teenage drama that I felt like I was going through. So that to me was kind of the one thing that stood out, although it was insanely helpful. I was always like, oh, it would have been cool like to have more relatable examples and have it more geared towards like a teenager.
Yeah.
And a teenager in nowadays as well. So I was like, all right, well, why don't I start blogging this? Because at that stage, blogging was this new thing that everybody did. So I would like, you know, write my posts and then put them on my my website that I had no idea how to really work, to be honest.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that at that time I was doing that, I met an incredible person called Andrew Griffiths. So some of my network will obviously know him. And at that stage, he was basically helping business owners write a book, so become authors.
Yeah.
And we had a conversation and he was like, oh, this is great. Like, you know, love what you're doing type of thing. But why don't you write a book? Like, why don't you put all of that content into a book that can help other teenagers? And I was like, yeah, that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
So I finished school and then my gap year, I took off to basically write a book. And I think it took about 8 months to write all of it, edit it, do all of that good stuff.
Yep.
And then I self-published. So that's the book story.
And what year was that?
What year did we meet?
I think 2014, maybe 13,
Yeah, so the year before that was when I was kind of doing the final writing and publishing. And then we met the week of my book launch.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. So just to go back just really quickly, how much time was in between when you hit that stage where you were tired of everything to publishing the book?
Not long, maybe like 2-3 years.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. That's actually a great turnaround.
Yeah.
That's cool. So from there, obviously, you've gone on to do a bunch of great things. From writing your book, what was next after that?
So basically, just finished school at that point, entered the workforce, was working for another great man, Sam Harrop. He is a business coach. And he basically took me under his wing, and I was like his personal assistant for the longest time. Learned a lot about business, obviously, from him. Being in like the business coaching industry, I guess, is the next logical step in the self-help industry. Like, you know, they have a bunch of courses and events and workshops that being a business coach, they would attend, and then I would go with him. So I was exposed to a bunch of new knowledge and education geared mainly around running a business. And then amongst all of that, I still did a bunch of speaking at events based on my story and writing my book and sort of promoting the book and all of that. Won a couple awards, got awesome recognition back in Cairns where I grew up, sort of my teenage years. and then fast forward, I guess, what, like 2-3 years from that point, we moved to the Gold Coast. And moving to the Gold Coast, I needed to find a different employment because we're in a new city. And that's when I saw the job ad for 5x5 as a project manager. Applied, had the interview with John on, what is it? The Super Bowl? Super Bowl.
That's right. You were upstairs.
Yeah.
And we were downstairs watching football.
Yeah. Having the job interview of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, and that was almost 4 years ago.
Wow. That's crazy. And so I know you're cringing inside having to talk about all this. I can see it, but we love you for breaking this down and letting everybody know. So that's great. And you obviously turned out as an incredible person. Fast forward to today. What do you still deal with in terms of health issues and challenges? Like, what are you dealing with today currently? And like, is it any more forward with what might be the cause of everything?
Yeah. Since I did my stint of seeing a bunch of specialists and whatever when I was sort of a younger teenager, I haven't really got back into starting that process again to kind of see how it's evolved and maybe there are developments and answers. But to this day, I still have challenges physically. So I still have the uncomfortable back feeling, you know, waking up, I still have it. If I sit too long, I feel it. If I stand too long, I feel it. It's not something that I ever notice not there. It's just kind of something that I've learned to live with. I wasn't active for the longest time just because I had this massive negative emotion to being active and working out, comparing myself to every other person in the gym or on the field. You know, I can't do that and makes me feel bad, so I'm not going to do it, type of thing.
So
it's still around. I don't have an answer to it. I just have to live with it. But I think the difference, particularly in the last year or so, that I've made is I've kind of realized that I still feel bad and I still feel sore and I still feel frustrated, but I'm not doing what Carla would usually do, and that is figuring it out. I feel like for the last X amount of years, I've still been living in a little bit of denial or just acceptance with it, where the last 18 months, I've definitely had a bit of a mindset shift to going, look, you're not getting any younger. I do feel like it is maybe getting a little bit worse as I get older. Like, I definitely feel it more. So I've started being more active, started doing BJJ a couple of times a week just to kind of keep the body moving and the mobility there. I see a physio once a week and we do sort of specialized exercises to kind of help with my posture a little bit more. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good. And it's, I love this story. This is why I wanted to do this and I forced you to do this. But I love the story because I feel like it's very relatable to a lot of people, especially nowadays. And I feel it's a great example to not allow something in life, no matter what it is, to hold you back or to stop you from doing something that you love or just doing anything. And I just think it's a great example. So I would actually love for you to speak on that to help people if they're in the same stage or whatever, they have an issue that they need to deal with. Just like, how can they not allow that to hold them back?
Yeah, so I can speak to my experience and kind of my mindset now. Yeah. And that is, I don't let myself kind of sit in maybe self-pity or sorrow for too long. Like, I know that there are other people out there that have it worse than me. You know, they don't have limbs, never mind sore limbs, they just don't have limbs.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they don't get the privilege of waking up tomorrow, or they don't have the ability to walk at all. I think that there will always be someone out there that has it worse than you. And I feel like you're being disrespectful, to be honest, to everybody else that does have it worse than you by sitting there and feeling sorry for yourself, because they're wishing 1,000% that they could just have a little bit of what you have.
Yeah,
and so I 100%. Get like really emotional about it, because I see maybe others, and like, I'm not saying I don't do it, because I do, where I sit in this like pity and then I'm like, oh, you know, why me? Why do I have to deal with this? Like, I have such a struggle, like blah, blah, blah. But I can't allow myself to do that for too long, because everybody has a story.
Yeah.
It might not be physical. It might not be a mental challenge. It might not be whatever, but some someone, everyone has a story. Everyone has a reason why they might not be able to do what they want to do, or, you know, a reason to justify why they've got an issue. But that's not going to get you anywhere, you know, like, yeah, I don't know if that's making sense, but
yeah, it does.
Like, I don't feel like anyone, to be honest, has the right to feel sorry for themselves if you've got up the next day and you've got the opportunity to live a life. Like, so many people don't get that opportunity, and so you get that opportunity, but then what do you decide to do with it? You decide to sit there and feel sorry for yourself and not contribute and not be productive and, you know, not live your life the best way that you can. Like, I just feel like that's such a cop-out. And yeah. So I just get really mad at myself when I get into that zone. And, you know, I get into that zone often. Like, I deal with mental health issues, and it comes and goes, and some days are worse than others. But what kind of helps me work through it is realizing that I'm feeling it, and then realizing that I don't have it as bad as, you know, other people out there, and realizing that it is all up to me to change it. Like, no one else is gonna, I think Sam said it really well in the previous episode, like, no one's gonna come and save you. Like, you need to get off your butt, and you need to make yourself happy. You need to make yourself productive in society. You need to go out and get whatever it is that you want to get, or be whoever it is you want to be. Like, there's nothing else to say about it, in my opinion. So, yeah, I get frustrated when I see people complaining about the stupidest little things. And maybe to them, that's the amount of stress that they've had to deal with in their life. And to them, that's a massive deal. And that's fine, whatever. But I don't choose to live my life like that. I don't choose for something else to be my limitation when I know the only limitation is you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's good. Like, that's such a refreshing way to look at it. But it is. It's perspective for anyone. Like, that's the one thing that you have to take into everything that you do is perspective. And you seem to nail that, so good job. Your seat's on fire, by the way.
I don't mean to preach, and I hate those, like, those motivational speakers, you know, that tell you how to live your life, but that's just my mindset, and that's just my opinion, having gone through what I've gone through.
Yeah, well, it's gotten you where you are today and the person that you are, so it's obviously done something. So that's good. So I guess we're going to wrap this up. But I have one final question for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, what do you do to treat yourself?
Oh, so there's a lot. But I would say my ultimate guilty pleasure is laying in bed with my dog, Toby, on the bed, Tyler next to me, and us binging on a TV show, like Billions or Suits or Ozark or something good. Like, I think that, yeah, that's my ultimate treat.
Yeah, that's a solid treat with little snacks on the side too.
Oh, of course, can't forget the snacks.
Well, this was cool. Kind of weird interviewing you, but I just hope that everybody takes your story as a lesson to just approach everything in life with a different perspective, thinking about, you've summed it up perfectly by saying somebody's always got it worse than you, and it's 100% true. So I just think that your mindset and your story helps show people that nothing can hold you back as long as you have the right mindset.
And I don't think, like, it's not the thing that everyone needs to be great, like, you all need to strive to write a book or to, you know, run a business or to, I don't know, run a marathon. Like, you, if that's not what you want to do, that's cool. That's not what you want to do. I think the reason why I've always kind of tried to level up in my life or achieve, I've got quotes again, is because, like, that has been the cycle of my life, like, literally starting back before I could walk, where Mom put the bottle in front of me and said, if you want that, you've got to go and get it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's kind of how I've been conditioned, is like, there's always going to be something out there that you think you can't do, but with a little effort, a little grit, a little determination, you can end up getting it. And so I think for me personally, it's just become not a game, but almost like, I like challenges now. I like going through the hero's journey. I like going through the tough, the uncomfortable, you know, the period where I think I can't do something. And then I come around and end up being able to do it. And it's not easy doing it, but I think I've almost started to, I don't know how you say this, like not get high on achieving, but it's like, yeah. It's like, Carla, like, well done. Like, you thought you couldn't do it. You did it. And I'm proud of you. So it's not like this external validation that I need, like, oh, you did this, well done, or oh, you're amazing, you did that.
It lights the fire inside of you.
Exactly. It's like,
that's... And that's going to be different for everyone, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 100%.
But, yeah, makes sense.
So I just wanted to make that clear. Like, it's not a competition, but it is a competition at the same time. But it's a competition with me.
Within yourself, yeah. 100%. Yeah.
And if I can make one last comment before we wrap up, like if you take one thing from this episode, please take this, and that is try not to judge. We all do it, and, you know, I still do it. I'm not saying I don't. But coming from someone that has had to deal with looks and comments and sort of like seeing people say stuff about me when I walk past, you know, or just look at me a certain way when I look past, we do notice it, and it is hurtful. Like, it takes a while to build a tough exterior or a tough skin, but regardless of how tough you appear on the outside, you're still, you know, you still have feelings, and you can still feel it on the inside. So if you see someone that maybe looks a little bit different, or maybe acts a little bit different, I would urge you to instead stop thinking whatever it is you're thinking. As humans, we do it. And instead, maybe try and flip it and look for something that is a positive on that person. So, you know, let's say you're at the gym and, you know, an overweight person, let's say, walks in to the gym. I use that example because I see it so many times, but reverse for me, right? Like a really tiny, really little. And you feel uncomfortable when you walk in the gym and have all these people sort of staring at you. And so, like, let's say, you know, an overweight person or a super skinny person walks into the gym, and you have the thought, like, oh, you know, wow, like, eek. I urge you to try and flip that and be like, wow, okay, that person is obviously doing something to better their health. So that's cool. You know, I'm proud of them. I don't know them, but I think that's a cool thing that they're doing. Or, you know, it could be someone that you see in the street, and your natural reaction would be to notice it and then maybe turn to your friend and sort of make a comment about it. But what if that comment was pointing out something that that person did really well? Like, maybe they've got an awesome haircut or a beautiful smile or something like that. And obviously this is just more of like an appearance thing because you don't know the person, but you know, I think everybody has something to offer. And I think as individuals, we have the responsibility to treat others the way that we want to be treated. So yeah, I guess I'll just kind of leave it with that, and urge you to try not to judge, but instead look for the positive when you can.
Well, thank you so much for coming on my show. Really appreciate that.
How long have you been dying to say that?
That's the only thing I wrote down here.
I knew it. Cool. All right. Well, I guess I'll take it back over, seeing though it is my show after all. As always, I highly recommend joining our Facebook group and following us on Instagram, treatyourself_podcast. And that's it. Thank you for tuning in to episode 11. See you next time.